But I don't think it is a radical proposition to say that if we're going to have a national security supplemental package, it ought to begin with our own national security first. And so I'll explain to him that while we understand that, I've made my position very clear, literally since the day I was handed the gavel, that we have to take care of our border first. And
I mean, that seems like the most obvious thing you could possibly say. That's the most obvious thing ever, but that's what's being fought over right now in the halls of Congress. So welcome to the program. Dana Loesch here with you, top of our first hour here. And this, of course, we've got Zelensky, who's in D.C. He was, I think he was meeting with senators earlier, right? He was meeting with members of the Senate earlier. And then he's, I think, was meeting with some House leadership. But House leadership's like, look, this is not something that we're going to do. It's not our fault either. I mean, blame the Democrats who refuse to at all whatsoever have any kind of serious discussion about what's going on at the border. Meanwhile, you have all these Democrat mayors who have been saying, stop sending us people, etc. Not going to happen. Not going to, because everybody needs to pay their fair share. All right. So the, I mean, why is that considered an unreasonable position for Democrats? We have to take care of our southern border before we consider sending money elsewhere. It is not our problem. These other situations that are going on right now that have nothing to do with our immediate interests, seems like, you know, with everything that we have seen, all of the fentanyl, what, 12,000 a day was the peak just. Was that last week or was it Monday? No, it was last week. It was like Thursday, Friday of last week. That's a big deal. A very big deal. That's like entire towns that are coming across. And people aren't being sent back. Crime is increasing in these border towns. It's a huge issue. And so for the president and Democrats to not come to the table on this, that's inexcusable. Hold the line. Republicans need to hold the line on this because God knows they can't hold the line on anything else right now. Yeah, we had that fun conversation yesterday. So you have Zelensky. You know how difficult it is to come over to the United States with everything that we're dealing with right now? It just seems, I get it that they're dealing with their situation in Ukraine. But we have our situation here in the United States. I mean, it's an invasion at the southern border. We have crime spiraling out of control in Democrat-run cities. We have raging inflation. People are broke. People can't buy houses. They feel discontent. They feel like they can't trust the system. And you got this guy over here with his hands out after we've given him hundreds of billions of dollars, and he still wants more. I was listening to Schumer speak this morning, and he was saying that, well, you know, if they can't get this money, then they're, you know, immediately going to have. That's not my problem. Go to France. Yeah, play this. Audio soundbite 19. Yes, this is. This just angers me when they put it in this perspective. Check it.
Zelensky made it so clear how he needs help, but if he gets the help, he can win this war. And he outlined in some great detail, A, the kind of help he needs and how it will help him win. Even many of our Republican colleagues talked about we are winning this war. And if we get the help that if he gets the help he needs, he will win. On the other hand, he made it clear, and we all made it clear, that if we lose, Putin wins. And this will be very, very dangerous for the United States. So we cannot let Putin influence through any surrogate what we need to do for Ukraine.
You know the calls for ceasefire? They need to call for a ceasefire in Ukraine. That's where the ceasefire needs to be called. It needs to be called there. I mean, this how much was the supplemental? $110, I'm looking at my notes. $110 billion, national security, blah, blah, blah. So $61 billion of that is for Ukraine. Now, forgive me. I swear to you, Kane, correct me if I'm wrong on this. You and Steve, I swear to you, we literally had that exact same soundbite. It wasn't, I don't think it was from Schumer, though. I think it was from McConnell over the summer when, again, you had Zelensky come and hat outstretched, and he was saying, well, if they get this aid, they can win the war. How many times have you heard that? If we don't even know where the last bit of aid went to. We do know after a little bit of snooping around by the IG, we do know that there was some money that went to go towards pensions and for this and that and this and that. And at the same time, the guy's shutting down churches and newspapers, you know, in the name of freedom. They're so bent on fighting for freedom. They got to, you know, close down this other stuff. But we've heard this over and over again. Well, you know, they'll win the war if we can just get this much. Yeah, I feel like we've heard that so many times before. So many times. We need the ceasefire over there, though. $61 billion. We've given over $100 billion. My question is this. What is the $61 billion going to do that the 100 plus billion that we have given them already hasn't? Many takers. What's that going to do? 61 additional billion dollars. The pittance that is given to the border is shameful. It's shameful. And I disregard all of these arguments from these people who say, well, you know, if we're not giving aid, Putin wins. If we're not doing this, Putin wins. These are just stupid, empty, meaningless platitudes that's not insight. It's propaganda. It's not opinion. It's propaganda. And that's exactly what this is. It's a war of attrition. And what is the end of the war? What does the end of this look like? When they say, well, Ukraine can win this war, what does that look like? What does that look like? Do you honestly think that Putin's going to head back to Moscow if Ukraine, and can they define what victory is if there is some sort of victory? And then ignoring the tensions that predated their entry into this, Russia's entry into this in the Donbas region. I mean, that what gets me is that the people who ignore the existing tensions in the Donbas region, that's such a colonizer attitude. You know, since that's a hot new word right now, I'm going to appropriate it from the left. That is the neocon colonizer attitude. And I'm actually correctly using that term, neocon. And neocon is like Lindsey Graham, someone who thinks that there is not a problem that the U.S. military and lots of firepower can't solve. I mean, yes, but also no. You can have territory. What was the, there's this piece of, pulled up. I was reading whether or not you have the sovereignty of the territory or independence of the area. I mean, there is a lot of history that is in that area that cannot be summed up in a 30-second soundbite. There's a lot of history regarding Ukraine's borders, that area, the Donbas region, the disputed territory particularly. There's a lot of history there that a lot of people just don't know because you're not expected to know that. That's not your backyard. That's not your backyard, and it goes back for generations. So that's why it's equally as preposterous to expect one conflict and another $61 billion is going to solve it. It is not. We're going to come back to this. We have more on it. So the latest with this Harvard president, did you guys hear about all this? Jiminy Christmas. Where's Harvard standards? So the chick who is over at UPenn, McGill, she goes. And then the chick over at Harvard stays because she's a DEI hire. Yes, she is. She's absolutely a DEI hire. Liz McGill's white privilege got her fired. So I guess that's what that looks like. It's true because there are a lot of people who objected to Claudine Gay's hiring in the first place. So this chick has apparently plagiarized as much, if not more, than Joe Biden, which I just didn't think was possible for any person. So do you realize that just this year alone, they dismissed 16 people for plagiarism? Just this year alone, 16 students were dismissed because of plagiarism. So she was found to have plagiarized a whole bunch of stuff, right? So now, on top of her disgraceful testimony, where she was saying, well, she was one of those that depends on the context. I know. But the corporate board at Harvard issued a statement this morning expressing unanimous, unflinching support for Claudine Gay. And then they kind of just glossed over her leadership or her plagiarism issues. They kind of just glossed over it. I mean, even the Harvard Crimson had discussed it. She had all the, and these aren't plagiarism allegations, by the way. I want to be very clear. They have evidence It's overwhelming proof. These aren't allegations. They're not accusations. They have indisputable evidence, hashtag facts, that she plagiarized a whole bunch of stuff. So this, and for over 24 years, she even plagiarized her 1997 PhD dissertation. And that was from the Washington Free Beacon. The Free Beacon gets into, I mean, it's pretty shameful. It's incredibly shameful. And they said, no, we're going to stand by her. We're going to stand by her. So their standards aren't even enough. I mean, as if excusing genocidal chants and bullying against Jewish students wasn't bad enough. Now they're saying that they have no standards at all. Why would anybody even want to go to Harvard? I mean, talk about reducing, it's Hamas University. Talking about reducing your standards. Hamas U, you can plagiarize whatever. And apparently, here's what's more. They knew, the Crimson writes that the university was aware in October of the allegations about the articles that she'd plagiarized. They were aware this entire time. Nobody said anything. DEI hires get all the excuses and the protections in the world. It's pretty amazing. Why didn't they go and address this back in October? I mean, that's why wasn't that a thing? But no. So they've stood by her after all of these years of kicking students out for plagiarism, after sidelining students if they said the wrong pronouns, you know, X, Y, Z. Now, if you're at Harvard and you're a DEI hire, you get to stay. And I don't know what leadership she's had on campus, except she's run off a lot of donors. A lot of donors. And then she had her safe spaces speech. So what does it take to get a faculty member at Harvard fired? For real, what does it take? If you're a DEI hire, apparently there's no answer for that. Nobody knows. I mean, this is pretty amazing. Now, on top of this, because we got a lot more coming up, we've got crony capitalism from Biden. Apparently, one of the big investments that they made, well, it was a waste of our tax dollars, $3 billion tax dollars. It's like a Solyndra part two to a solar company that took advantage of disadvantaged homeowners and communities, including the elderly. We're going to talk about that coming up. We also have the latest with GOP and Iowa and all of that other annoying stuff. So have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's probably not as incognito as you think. And why would it be? I mean, incognito mode, like the Chrome browser itself, is Google product. And Google has made its fortune by tracking your movements online. There's even a $5 billion class action lawsuit against the company in California, where it's accused of secretly collecting user data. Now, Google's defense is that incognito does not mean invisible. So how do you actually make yourself as invisible as possible online? Well, you use ExpressVPN. Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked and data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. One of those data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit ExpressVPN.com/Dana and get 3 extra months for free. That's ExpressVPN.com/Dana. Visit ExpressVPN.com/Dana to learn more.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Zara, I don't care how you say it. They just sell clothes. It's like a bougier Forever 21. So they got in trouble because they used, I don't understand what their ad campaign was about, but they had people, like, it looked like bodies wrapped up in plastic bags and a model standing in front of it. And for some reason, because people who are pro-Hamas Gazans think that everything is literally about me. Like, everything. Every ad, like, every sentiment, every opinion ever stated on the internet is all about me because the world revolves around me. Oh, my gosh. They thought it was about them, and they demanded that the clothing giant apologize to them. Now, what I would have done was photoshopped a million middle fingers on my hands and sent that. They didn't, though, because they're dumb. And they said that they were sorry and nobody cares. They said it was they regretted a misunderstanding. So they didn't exactly apologize. They just basically said, we're sorry that you're so stupid and barely literate that you didn't understand what this ad campaign was about. We regret that you're so incredibly stupid. And it was their campaign called The Jacket. And if you didn't get it because you're stupid, we're sorry that you're stupid. That was basically their apology. So Team Zara, right? All right, moving on. Chris Rock and other comedic talents are not going to host the Golden Globes. They declined the offer because nobody wants to get slapped by a cuck. That's why. It's true. Where's the lie? Moving on. Declining invitations to holiday parties is actually good for you. Except if it's my party, because that'll get you killed. Moving on. Yeah, they said it's actually, you know what? I think this is a stupid study. Also, I think that some people are overscheduled anyway. There's no reason why you got to go to 5,000 different parties. You know, I mean, I love the reason for the season too. I do, but it doesn't mean you got to go to everybody's thing. Just saying, only come to mine. That's the only one that counts. Rescue crews searching through the scene of a partial building collapse in the Bronx. And why are people coming for Denzel? We're about to throw some hands. The Guardian says Denzel Washington was cast as Hannibal in a next Netflix film. And in Tunisia, there's controversy because people are butthurt over it. He is the, you know, the ancient general Hannibal. And people are very upset because they said, oh, my gosh, it's a race thing. And they said it has to do with woke culture. Look, let me tell you, when it involves Denzel Washington, it does not have to do with woke culture because Denzel Washington is a phenomenal flipping actor. Denzel Washington is one of the best living actors that we have. He is one of my favorite actors, and I dare you to find someone who could touch him in this role. End of. I will fight on that hill, and everyone else will die. All right, as we move, we're coming up to the bottom of this hour. We got a lot of stuff to hit. Politics, wokery, so much more. Let's talk mean as we roll into the bottom of this hour. Our partners over at Wise Foods. You would rather be prepared for anything that would happen if something, you know, heaven forbid, you got another freeze that comes or a tornado, something like that. When emergencies strike, the last thing you want to fret over is where your next meal is going to come from. This is where Wise Food Storage comes in. You can save $50 on your 4-week survival food kit. Get free shipping all at preparewithdana.com. It's a 2-bucket, 4-week survival food kit, 2,200 calories. You get 64 grams of protein per day, 28-day supply. Everything is made with high-quality U.S. ingredients. Freeze-dried, dehydrated, very easy to prepare. You just add water, and it all has a 25-year shelf life as well. They have all kinds of dishes, tons of protein packed in there, and flavorful as well. So be prepared and order yours today at preparewithdana.com. Save $50 on your 4-week survival food kit plus free shipping. Just go to preparewithdana.com.
Where is the fastest rising area for commercial real estate? Train stations. Another huge effect of COVID are people's commutes to and from their office. While office buildings in major cities are getting cleared out, the only parts of cities that are growing are train stations. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
This souring on higher education makes America an outlier among all advanced nations. American universities have been neglecting a core focus on excellence in order to pursue a variety of agendas, many of them clustered around diversity and inclusion. It started with the best of intentions. Colleges wanted to make sure young people of all backgrounds had access to higher education and felt comfortable on campus. But those good intentions have morphed into a dogmatic ideology and turned these universities into places where the pervasive goals are political and social engineering, not academic merit.
That's Fareed Zakaria, where he was on CNN, I guess. Yeah? You with us? Mm-hmm. Welcome to the program. Welcome back. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this first hour. And is he just now realizing this? Is he like just like realizing stuff? He and his friends are just like together realizing things. Fareed Zakaria, it seems very similar to what the left reacted so hostily towards back when people would say to stay in your lane on things, meaning if you didn't know enough about it or if you were giving a very stale take, just maybe perhaps stay in your lane. I don't know why a lot of people are high-fiving him over saying something that we've been talking about for over a decade. Just because you come around at the point where it is the least advantageous for you to remain on your current ideological path, and you think that because you waited until the last minute to hop off, that that should be viewed as some great feat of realization or some, you know, sacrifice of ideology, because I don't. I just think it's just you finally are saying what you're saying, the obvious. I don't like rewarding the obvious. I'm all about conversions and, you know, people coming to agree with you. But at the same time, I do think that you get to retain the right to determine whether or not that's a shallow move or if it is just something genuine. And it just seems weird that now, after all of this time, after all the lawsuits with Asian students and the way conservative students have been treated and the way that we've known Jewish students have been treated on campus for decades now, now you're going to say something just only now? You just now realized it? These, the people who were very upset about being told to stay in their lane over different issues that they were clueless on. So I'm just, I know that there's some people that I would say that are ideologically more aligned with me that are celebrating this as some kind of big win, but I don't look at it that way at all. I just think it's, yeah, this is obvious that you should have been saying this for 10 years, longer. I mean, it's been obvious to anyone who's cared to take their head out of their own backside to look. It's been obvious. Well, and then the way he says it, retrain their gaze on their core strengths. Can you just state the obvious? I mean, when you're in broadcast commentary, just state it. People don't need some sort of Shakespearean lecture, okay? They don't need all that. They just want it straight. You don't need to sit here and get all Shakespearean about it. But this is the obvious. A lot of people are seeing it, and it's crazy that it had to get this bad before people could see the natural progression of where leftism goes. What they thought that what we were being hyperbolic? Were we exaggerating whenever we said this is the natural conclusive path to your ideology? Did you think we were joking? Because this is it. Here we're at it. When you have 1930s tactics being used against Jewish people today, people who are afraid to even freely worship on their college campuses. This is insane. This is the United States of America. It's just wild to me. And only when it looks advantageous do these people say something. Because now it's so bad, you have to say something. Oh my gosh, now it's so bad. These are people, they shift their allegiance to where they think the power is. And they believe that the power lies in victimization. And for the longest time, the left has manufactured victimization. I was watching... the writing is a little, but it's called The Gilded Age. I don't know if any of you have ever seen it. And it's basically, I mean, it's the Gilded Age of America, back when you had all the nouveau riche and you had all of these big families, the railroad families and the shipping families and all these people that came out, the Vanderbilts and Rockefellers and all this. And their fight with the Astors and the old money people who were wealthy before the Civil War, and their sort of battle, not just to control or have a place in society, but to sort of, in a way, it was like mainstreaming being able to make one's self. So it's very interesting. And there's one scene where you have these mill workers that are going to go on strike. And I actually thought it was quite, because you have guys that are represented as these old vaudeville villains and the total ridiculous lazy stereotype of, you know, big business owners, et cetera. And you have the total ridiculous stereotype of the union workers and all this. And I think that one of the main protagonists in the story, they actually played it pretty realistically. I mean, they played it pretty straight. And he explained, look, I can't just arbitrarily all of a sudden out of nowhere jack up wages, because it will affect the rest of the market. And we can't do that just yet. And we'll meet you on safety. We'll meet you on this and that in education. But this has to be handled differently. And I thought that was actually the first time I've ever seen in a discussion in any kind of television or movie that explanation on that. Because you see it today with fast food workers, etc. And I was pleased that they had included that. But what got me is what I was thinking about, and I was talking to my son about this, because they had the guys who had formed a union that wasn't recognized yet, that they were staging a strike and they were going to prevent the scabs from going in and taking the jobs, etc. And they were facing off against the guard that was called out to help protect the mill, etc. And protect the guys that were the replacement workers coming in. And no shots were fired, and it was averted at the last minute. But it reminded me of how, because right at that time was when Marxism was exploding and in Europe, in Russia and Europe, and just really socialism, Marxism, all the isms, which are just different sides of the same crap coin, they were exploding. And one of the ways to really sort of seed the human mind was to exploit these conflicts and highlight the victim mentality and really push the victimhood and the victim mentality and the victimization and use that to demand this false perception of what they think equality was. And they still do that today. You see them do that today with Occupy Wall Street and BLM and all this other stuff. It's still a practice of the far left today. And it goes all the way back, even probably before then. But that's when it was really mainstreamed. And you had all these commies that decided to exploit these conflicts and this discontentment and unrest as a way to plant the seed of communism and make everyone worship at the altar of victimhood, because that's when the power dynamic began flipping, where victimization, being the victim, was the area of power. Being the victim meant that you could demand certain things that you couldn't demand if you were viewed as the antagonist or the stronger person in this scenario. Because if someone's the victim, then someone's got to be the bad guy, right? That's the way that that's the way that the left works. If you establish who the victim is, well, who made them the victim? Someone victimized them and they became the victim. So who's the bad guy? And by disingenuously framing every single political debate and every single discussion on policy and everything in that lens, in that framing, then someone has to be the bad guy. And it's very, very easy to cast all of your opponents as the bad guy. And that immediately engenders support for your cause because you are the victim. That's when the power dynamic was shifting. And they exploited all of that at the time and continue to do it today. And so it's no different when we see it now. The reason, back to my point, Fareed Zakaria and others, now we're saying, well, you know, these universities, maybe they need to kind of slow their roll on their, you know, Hamas, you know, love and their worship at the altar of anti-Semitism. The only reason that they're switching now is because they're confused. You've had a people who were legitimately, genuinely victimized when they were attacked on October 7th. You've had people here in the United States who were legitimately and genuinely victimized when they were targeted by anti-Semites in college universities, on streets, when their businesses were vandalized, when they were identified because they had their skull caps on. All of this. A people who were genuinely, legitimately victimized. So the left, in it's forever lifting up of victims. They see that there's a new victim class and they immediately have this knee jerk reaction. Oh, well, there's a baddie who did this to them. But they've never been friends. They've ignored everything that these people have endured for the past several decades. This is not anti-Semitism on college campuses is not new. They're only talking about it now because it's grown to be so bad. And it was allowed to flourish by these people's apathy. They fed this. They encouraged it by looking the other way. And not just against Jewish students, but conservative students, Asian students. They looked the other way for so long. And now they're like, well, our rules tell us that we have to give power to the victim. And now these people have been legitimately victimized. So it's not. Forgive me if I don't take their sudden conversion as being something sincere. I don't. I think that they're just following their formula of power dynamics, and it just happened to align very briefly. We don't even know how long that's going to last. So, long story short, I think he's full of it. Does that answer your questions, everybody? Does that enlighten everybody on this topic? Full of it. Now, a couple of other things, too, we've been talking about Harvard and talking about McGill and Claudine Gay. And I don't even know what this means for their standards going forward, honestly. I actually don't. You have the House impeachment inquiry. Republicans can only lose 3 votes on this. This ongoing investigation into Joe Biden. A lot of the Democrat lawmakers have been saying that, oh, this is a witch hunt. This is just theater. No, what you guys did was theater. You guys didn't even hold an inquiry. You literally immediately skipped the inquiry and went right into the vote. That's not even how the process works. But to hell with process, you thought you're just going to go right into it and do it. So at least Republicans are holding a legitimate inquiry to get to the bottom of this and incorporate evidence. Democrats didn't even entertain evidence. They just went right into impeachment. So this is the right way to do it. But in order to have their, apparently they're considering a vote Wednesday to formalize the impeachment inquiry. There's all these different steps to go into it. And a lot of people think, oh, well, this may be very, very slow. Why are Republicans moving so slow on this? It's not that they're moving slow. It's that they're taking steps, in my opinion, to contrast how ridiculous Democrats handled theirs. And theirs was a legitimate witch hunt, which I think is why they went so fast. They would, if they would have held an impeachment inquiry, it would have been disastrous for them because there's nothing there. They never even impeached, you know, the former president on any kind of criminal charges. There were no criminal charges that were brought forward. But with this, I mean, there's a lot of receipts, a lot of evidence here. And the inquiry is the process by which you find all of this evidence. The inquiry is the process from which you are weighing, is this a legitimate cause for indictment or not? And so that's what they're doing. So they have the vote to formalize it. They're eyeing it for tomorrow, and they can only lose three votes. They can only lose three. I mean, it's razor thin. So we'll follow that and give you updates as it happens. This is, should be a Christmas gift that you have. If you well, for yourself, treat yourself. All right, so this is how I do Christmas. If it's something that I want, I get one for me and one for you. One for me, one for you. You can do this too. This is so clever, the way that they do this. The headrest, okay, it's exactly as it says. It's a headrest safe for the passenger side, so it doesn't interfere with driver performance or safety. Now, here's what's cool. The headrest slides. You can protect your valuables, right? You can have this safe. You can install it in your car, but you have the slide. If you want a removable safe to take with you, the headrest slide is the model that you want to get. So the interior safe slides in and out of the headrest housing, and they can cover the headrest itself in whatever material your car interior is made of, because they can match over 85% of the stuff on the market. So you lock it in place in the housing, and when you need it with you, you just unlock it, the safe, you slide it out, and you go. It's a symmetrical design, so you can actually install it on the passenger or driver's seat. If you have multiple vehicles, you can take your slide from vehicle to vehicle. And if you're traveling by air, this removable safe is TSA compliant. It was given the Editor's Choice Award for by Concealed Carry Magazine for best-in-class vehicle safe. And while it's designed as a gun safe, the headrest safe is invisible, secure storage for all of your valuables, jewelry, medication, cash, other things. Doesn't matter. You can get to it in 2.5 seconds. You got a magnetic access door, user-friendly biometric fingerprint reader, keypad, and a hard key. It's one of the most innovative products to hit the market. You need it for Christmas. You need to order it today. Experience this innovation at Headrest Safe, theheadrestsafe.com. Use code Dana for an exclusive $50 off. So that's theheadrestsafe.com, code Dana for $50 off, 100% money back guarantee.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
But we know this year's Hanukkah is different. It's been 65 years since the deadliest day of the Jewish people since the Holocaust. 65 years.
Can he get a sentence right? And sentence. That's it. That's all we need. Just one. 65 years since the deadliest day of the Jewish people since the Holocaust.
Well, October 7th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, he confuses us. When I hear him talk, I'm like, are we also like having issues?
So he meant days is what he meant, right?
Did he?
So I think that's what he meant, right? We're 65 days. Since October 7th?
I don't speak turd, dude. I don't know. I legit have no clue.
I'm doing the math real quick, and I think that's what it is. I think it's days. He meant days, but he said years.
There was also this, audio soundbite 2. Oh, for the love. This doesn't exist.
I had a cranial aneurysm. It was in the middle of a snowstorm. Not a joke. I couldn't figure out how they were going to, for President Reagan was nice enough to send Air Force a helicopter one, take me down, but it couldn't fly.
There's no such thing as Air Force Helicopter One. There is Marine One, but there's no such thing as Air Force Helicopter One. He flies on it, so he ought to know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're president of the United States and you get your own helicopter, you're going to remember the name of the helicopter. It's going to be, I've never even ridden on it. I've seen it only on TV. Oh, no, I've seen it circle something when they took the president out from speaking somewhere in D.C. I mean, it's your own chopper. Marine One. You remember the name. And Marine One sounds way cooler than Air Force Helicopter One. It's the only time that they ever had anything jokingly named like that was Reagan's riding lawnmower that he had at Rancho Del Cielo. They called it Lawnmower One. And they put a giant presidential seal sticker, Secret Service did, on him because they thought it was hysterical. And when he was at, that was one of the funniest things, because he legitimately was like a ranch guy. Like, he did the work. He didn't have a hobby ranch where he just wanted to, you know, have other people do his work. He legit went, he built his own patio furniture. He laid the stone. He built all, put up all the fencing. He did all of that, dug his own pond. And the only time that they intervened, that Secret Service was like, wait, hold up, stop it, was the wood chipper. So he was taking all of his stuff, you know, when he was, you know, cutting down trees and doing all this, and he was putting the wood chipper, and it freaked those dudes out. And they said under no circumstances. And the people there said that was the only time that they actually got, you know, they because they let him, you know, he was very capable, but they're like, no, we got to draw the line here, dude. We cannot have the president of the United States like accidentally falling in the wood chipper. Stay away from it. It's not Fargo. This is before Fargo. Stay away from it. So that was the only time. That was the only thing he couldn't do. So other people had to do it. He had to have like other people do it for him because they wouldn't allow him to do it. But he would take his horse and he'd ride it like all over that mountain, Santa Ynez Mountains. He'd ride it all over. And there was only a couple of guys. One guy actually who was a good English rider who could keep up with him because he was nuts. He just like rode everywhere. And you got to be, honestly, you got to be careful up there when you're on some of these trails because you look to your right and there's like a 60-foot cliff. I mean, I'm not joking. It's really like that. They offered to let me drive the Hummer one time up there on these little tiny roads where you're basically, it's carved into a cliff. And I remember I looked at one of these guys. I'm like, I can tell that you're not active anymore because you just offered to let me, a woman who drives like a bat out of hell, drive the presidential Humvee here on a tiny road where this damn thing barely fits. We will go tumbling off this cliffside. Is that what you want? They're like, on second thought. And I'm like, this is what I thought. So I'm like, as much as I would love to, I will totally yeet us off a cliff inadvertently. All right. So coming up in our second hour, we've got lawsuits against Media Matters. We got all kinds of stuff. And we're also going to talk to the Missouri AG too coming up. Stick with us. More of the Dana Show after this. Looking for a proactive solution in the battle against COVID-19? Well, ivermectin is now available at All Family Pharmacy, based in Boca Raton, Florida. With a growing interest in its potential benefits, ivermectin has emerged at the forefront for its antiviral properties. Supported by robust research and real-world experiences, it has gained new attention as a possible ally in managing the impact of the virus. For reliable information and access to quality products like ivermectin, visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana and save 10% with promo code Dana10. Your health matters, so stay informed. Visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana. Navigate these challenging times with informed choices and proactive steps. All Family Pharmacy is U.S.-based and safe. Embrace the possibilities with ivermectin. Save 10% with code Dana10 when you place your order now at allfamilypharma.com/Dana. That's allfamilypharma.com/Dana, code Dana10. That's Dana and the number 10.
Yeah, I think we should separate the two. I don't think that Vladimir Putin should be given a green light to invade and conquer Ukraine and Europe simply because for 40 years we've had a tough time coming to a conclusion on immigration policy. But listen, Poppy, we're going to work at this. I'm at the table. I hear what Republicans have been saying. We're going to try to come to a conclusion, and I'm sitting down with Senator Lankford and others in good faith this week.
There's no good faith in this. There's no good faith in this at all. This is Senator Chris Murphy, who says Republicans are giving a green light to invade Europe. Oh, now it's invading Europe. Yesterday he said invade Ukraine. Now it's, oh, if you don't give us the money that we want to go and launder in Ukraine, then I guess you like the invasion of Europe. Well, then let Europe deal with it. I'm just not going to be moved by this. Whenever people get hysterical and they think that hysteria is going to move me, I just get more rigid. And I think a lot of you do, too. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lasher with you, top of the second hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can also follow along on YouTube, Facebook, channel 347, DirecTV. He says, oh, they want draconian immigration policy changes. There's no policy change. They just want you to enforce the damn law. Look, no policy change is required to enforce the law. Hey, no new policy needs to be proposed to just enforce the law. Super simple. It's all it takes. All it takes. But yet that's not, they think that that's apparently too far. That's just one too far. That's too much to do. We can't have that. These are not serious people. And what is this giving a green light to invade Europe? What is that? Because we're not going to give them $61 billion on top of the already hundreds of billions that we've already given them. That the $61 billion, it wasn't the hundreds of billion that we gave them before, but the $61 billion, that's what's really going to do it. They're not invading Europe. What is that? That's like War Inc. talk. They're not going to invade Europe. They have no desire to invade Europe. I'm tired of the disingenuousness of this. And I'm tired of these people acting like, well, you know, unless you do this, then you're supporting. It's not supporting that at all. It's just saying that that's not their aim to do. Take one look at their economy. Take one look at the fact that they've had to blow through most of their young active duty age male population already in this war of attrition. They're not going to invade Europe. Good grief. They can't. This is not the Russia of the 80s and 70s. They can't. Have you seen their leader, by the way? Okay, now that Kane, if you want to talk about body doubles. They're not invading Europe, though. It's not going to happen. But we'll see. I mean, I John Kirby addressed it briefly. Audio soundbite 5, because they're talking about running out of money. Where are these other... Is he going to these other countries to ask... Is Zelensky going to these other countries to ask for billions too? Is it just us? Like maybe some of these other European nations that jaw about the United States, maybe you guys can put up. Listen to this, audio soundbite 5.
Is there a plan B? You know, is there some executive action? He does not control the purse strings here. Is there some executive plan that he can kind of end run Congress here?
Look, we'll do what we can to continue to support Ukraine if we run out of funds, but there won't be much we can do, Phil. I mean,
this whole thing is exasperating. And the fact that everything at the border is hinged upon this. Goodness. But the whole notion, and I've talked about this with candidates before on this program, this whole notion that, you know, somehow if, you know, $61 billion or this $100 billion or that billion, if we don't do this, if we don't give this, if we don't give this, then somehow that's giving a green light to Russia to do what? Because it's Hanukkah right now. And I was reading this story a little earlier today. The Biden White House is being accused of ignoring, this is via CNN, families' requests to attend the White House Hanukkah reception. They said that they were snubbed. It says several family members of U.S. citizens believed to have been taken hostage by Hamas had asked to attend the Hanukkah reception at the White House on Monday. They never received the invitations, according to the father of one of the missing Israelis. This is a 19-year-old. And they said that they had reached out. They were not invited. A White House spokesperson declined to comment. They had 800 guests featuring, they included Holocaust survivors, lawmakers, Jewish leaders. And the also they had, I think, a couple of like some other diplomats, etc. there. But they're saying that they were snubbed. Now, not only did they not invite them, apparently when the families reached out, they were ignored. Oh, goodness. I thought that this president wanted to be President Sniffs McKid's empathy, right? This doesn't really go a long way with that. Now, was it a deliberate snub? Was it deliberate? Is it something that they did on purpose, or is it just kind of par for the course of a ridiculous White House that doesn't function very well? I mean, I think you could go both. I think it's probably the latter, but optics is everything. Optics, what it's perceived as, is the truth in these situations. But they didn't try to rectify it. They didn't try to rectify it at all. How do you have a Hanukkah celebration and you not include the families of people who were taken hostage by Hamas and still are in captivity, held hostage by Hamas? How do you not, especially now when there's so much that's been revealed about people's characters after this attack on October 7th. Now, at the event, it was said, this was ABC, that Biden touted the work that his administration has been doing to try to secure the release of the hostages. So he was taking, he didn't want to talk about the American hostages, but he took credit for freeing others, apparently, according to the way that ABC puts it here. So in the deal, however, it doesn't seem like there was any kind of insistence on the part of the White House to make sure that American hostages were freed. You have American families and American citizens in captivity, and you do not invite the American families to the White House Hanukkah celebration? You don't invite the American families of the American hostages to the White House Hanukkah celebration? That is one of the biggest fails. That's an optic fail, number one. It's just a humanity fail, number two. So why? I mean, you can't sit here and say that you're empathetic, but while not demonstrating it. Can't have it both ways. So I don't know. I mean, I hope that this is something Karine Jean-Pierre ought to address this. I don't think this is something they can just sweep under the rug here. But how do you not invite them? I mean, apparently they asked them later on, I saw it tweeted out, that they, oh, well, now the way that they want to rectify it. This is from NBC. Biden has invited family members of the Americans held hostage to a meeting at the White House. It will be their first in-person meeting since October 7th. Oh, so they got to skip the Hanukkah celebration, but you can come to the meeting. Come to a meeting. What are they going to meet about? My gosh. This is just so exhausting. Dealing with these people is exhausting. Now, with all of this, we were talking about the NDAA and also the FISA. House Republican leadership pulled two bills reforming the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act from the floor. As the House Speaker, he was getting some backlash because he allowed them on the floor in the first place. So the Washington Examiner said that neither of the bills related to Section 702 were going to go to the floor for a vote this week. Republicans have been kind of going back and forth on how to either extend 702. Obviously, some were against it. And Johnson was going to, both of them were going to be introduced today. And then whichever one ended up getting the most votes, that's the bill that was going to go to the Senate. One of them was the Protect Liberty and End Warrantless Surveillance Act. And that was from House Judiciary. The other was the FISA Reform and Reauthorization Act. And that's the House Permanent Select Committee on Intel. And so they were fighting because you had Turner and Davidson, both of Ohio, or Representative Davidson. He's the Judiciary Committee. The other guy's on the House Intel Committee, Mike Turner. And they were accusing each other of, well, I can't say it, redacted lying about the judiciary bill. We'll put it like that. They were very creative with their speech there. They were saying that one, they were lying each about the bill. That would have been wild if that would have gone forward. If you would have had FISA go forward and you're still not having anything about the border, you have FISA go forward and you have Republicans seriously entertaining the situation with giving Ukraine money, you have FISA go forward in the middle of all of that. I think that would have been just the ultimate straw. I think that would have been pretty much it at that point. Good night. So we'll see where that goes. Now, in the meantime, the border security aspect of NDAA, I don't know, you even have the governor, audio soundbite 8, of Arizona. And we don't like her. Listen to this, audio soundbite 8.
I'm here at the Lukeville Port of Entry to assess the situation on the ground firsthand and get Customs and Border Patrol the resources they need to reopen our port of entry. Border security is a top priority, and as long as I'm governor, I'll do whatever I can to end the chaos at the border. I'm not afraid to stand up to politicians on either side who aren't doing what's in the best interests of Arizona. And I'm taking action. This week, I sent a letter to President Biden demanding the resources and manpower to open this port of entry. And we announced Operation Secure to step up state support for local law enforcement. But Arizona can't do this alone, nor should we have to. We're asking the federal government to reimburse us for the costs to Arizonans. For far too long, Arizona has borne the brunt of federal inaction on our southern border, and I'm tired of it. Now is not the time for partisan politics. It's time for action.
She's a Democrat, like a bad one that we don't like, and she's saying this. The more Democrats come out like this, the more that it's going to make it a lot more difficult for Biden and Democrats, other Democrats in Congress, to push back on this. Republicans so far have been holding the line on it. They need to continue to do so. We're going to talk more about that. We got headlines on the way. Our friends over at Patriot Mobile, the Christian conservative wireless provider, the one, the only, and they're unwavering in their commitment to values and providing you with amazing service. And they're all about prioritizing that service and those values too. So they have their free smartphone with code Friday76. You can make the switch today, the promotion that they have ongoing right now, and you can talk with one of their awesome 100% US-based customer service members. They make switching so easy, and when you switch, you're going to save a lot of money because they have tons of different plans to choose from, something that's tailor-made for you and your family. You can add, you know, lines. You can put your whole family on one. I mean, they'll figure out something that works for you. But like I said, you're going to save money and you're also going to get the best service. They have dependable nationwide coverage in all three major networks. So you get the best service and you're not funding progressive causes. I mean, I've had the best service with them. I've traveled the world and I've never had an interruption. It's always been so great. And saving money, well, that's unbeatable in today's economy. So visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call them at 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Friday76 to get that free smartphone. Make the switch today at PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up, record U.S. holiday air travel. 7.5 million people are going to fly, according to AAA. Does that mean we're going to see more fun videos of people having shenanigans on airplanes? Just really curious about this. Is that what that means? Because, I mean, to have that many people flying, woo! 7.5 million, according to AAA. And they say that this, goodness, it's like one of the busiest year in travel season since they began tracking the data all the way back in 2000. So they said from December 23rd to January 1st, that's like the crazy busy season. That even beats the pre-COVID record of 7.3 million seen during the same period in 2019. Now, they said that because they have more efficient airplanes, it doesn't mean like more jet fuel consumption, which I thought was interesting, a little thing in there. So yeah, going to be crazy, a record crazy busy, the craziest busiest in 23 years. Just so you know, so get to how you're doing early and all that stuff. And I don't know how this happens. An LAX passenger arrives on an international flight without a passport, a visa, or a ticket. It was a Russian dude, too, who flew from Europe to LAX without a ticket, visa, passport. They have no idea how he does it. I don't even know. Where did he go through? Apparently he evaded security in Copenhagen. And then that's where his flight departed. He wasn't on the manifest. He wasn't on the passenger list of either flights. That's wild. He did have some identification. He had like a partial photograph of a passport. He was a Russian dude and that's it. So they said he's not in the CBP system either. They've never encountered him. And they're still trying to, that's all the information that's out there. They're still trying to figure that out. Looks like you need to do a little bit better work out there, Copenhagen. How does that happen? Florida School District is adding 4-day weekends to combat chronic absences. So if there's no school, you can't count them as being absent. Isn't that, how does that work? I love the entrenched administrative system. So they're just going to add 2 days
to the
weekend.
Maybe they're priming the kids for like the 3 or 4 day work weeks they've been talking about for the last couple years.
I just don't know. Can I be honest? I don't know what people do with that much free time. What the hell do people do? I cannot sit still for the life of me. What the hell do people do? Nothing bores the hell out of me more than an entire stretch of a weekend day with nothing to do. I will invent things to keep busy. I can't stand it. That's torture. Ugh. My family hates me for it. They're like, oh my gosh, sit down. Can you just try? Two mystery ghost ships washed up on a beach and tourists started immediately climbing on them, doing tourist things. Of course they did. Okay, for real though, would you do it too? You'd totally climb on them ships. I don't know. One was
Guerrero. When I was younger, I probably would have.
I don't know. Like when I've been jet skiing out, there's an island on the Caribbean you can jet ski around, and there's like an old rusted out ship. They tell you not to. It looks like Tetanus Central. So that's why I stay away from it. But if it didn't look like Tetanus Central, I probably would explore. It'd be neat. Anyway, they said this other boat washed up on the same beach. It was sent out to rescue the first ship, suffered a technical problem. So now people are, the vessel's rusting away. And so it looks nasty. The first one looks totally tetanus-y. And people keep running up and climbing all over it. And y'all are going to get hurt. And it's going to be y'all's fault. Nobody else's problem but yours. A squatter won a battle over a dead woman's home and sold it for a huge profit. This is a crazy story. It's so bad in the UK. He took over this lady's home, a retiree. She passed away. And he ended up selling it for like $500,000. And kept the profits. No. We got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. And our partners for this portion of our program, it's our friends over at Black Rifle Coffee. They make the best cup of coffee that is out there. Everything else is just garbage. I told you we're shopping for a new espresso machine because ours totally bit the dust, and I'm having to drink this nasty, ridiculous garbage. I get out the French press to do my Black Rifle Coffee because I can't stand like the pods and all that stuff. It's just all the other stuff tastes stale. Black Rifle Coffee has the absolute best roast out there. And right now they're having the Buy More, Save More sale. So from December 4th through the 13th, you can get 20% off if you spend $50, 25% off if you spend $75, 30% off if you spend $100. And all of that stuff is applied right in your cart. And you can go and check out their subscriptions too to the coffee club. When you become a member of Black Rifle Coffee Club, you get 30% off your first subscription order with code Dana, which is awesome. This is the best way to get high quality coffee roasted right here in America, that from a company that is owned by veterans, that employs veterans in active duty as well. Premium coffee for people who love America. No shipping fees either for the coffee club. Never run out of coffee again. So visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Join the Black Rifle Coffee Club today. Get 30% off your first month with code Dana. Start saving money on high quality coffee roasted here in the US of A. blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, with lax Republican gun laws across the country, we've got to take very seriously anybody who's making any kind of violent threats, especially genocidal threats. Having said that, where does Elise Stefanik get off lecturing anybody about anti-Semitism when she's the hugest supporter of Donald Trump, who traffics in anti-Semitism all the time?
Hugest? That's Jamie Raskin, who apparently thinks that he is the king of all anything that has to do with Jewish people at all whatsoever. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here, bottom of this second hour. Her questioning, Elise Stefanik's line of questioning, was perfectly reasonable. And I think for Jamie Raskin to play this card and suggest somehow, and he's intimating anti-Semitism on her part, I think that that's just abhorrent. It's shameful, and he should apologize. I think he's a walking joke. That's ridiculous. She had every right to question. He's angrier at her for questioning these university presidents that have coddled anti-Semitism and have allowed Jewish students to be bullied. He has more to say to Elise Stefanik for asking tough questions of these people who have created these situations than the people who've created these situations. Tells me whose side he's on. If you want to go down that path, Raskin, I mean, that's the way that you go. Then it shows that Raskin's on the side of Hamas U. It shows that Raskin's on the side of those who threaten and bully Jewish students. I mean, I understand that he's, you know, partial to his super progressive far left ideology, but good grief, cause and effect are pretty obvious here. This is elementary. Every single question that she asked was legitimate. And he has an issue with that? He has an issue with tough questioning of these people who have fomented these situations on all of these college campuses? He has an issue with asking why it is that you can get bounced from a university and have admissions rescinded over pronoun usage, but not if you're screaming death to the Jews? Seriously? What kind of asinine questioning is that? She doesn't, where does she get off? She can question whomever the hell she wants to. You bigot. Jamie Raskin is a bigot. Let's be real about this. The way that he responded to that is textbook bigotry. because she is not Jewish. I don't even know what she is. So he's saying that because she's not Jewish, she has no right to question the anti-Semitic policies of someone who may be at a college university. What relevance does that have to the way that students have been bullied on campus? What relevance is that to the fact that students fear for their safety because of how they worship? What an absolute bigot. When these people show you who they are, believe them. All right, we got to talk about this story with this Texas mother and this abortion case. I wanted to read more about it yesterday, so I didn't bring it up yesterday. This is a weird case, and I don't know why there's so much problems with this. So the way that I understand it, I was reading everything I could about the case has to do with this 31-year-old Dallas mother, Kate Cox. She has kids. She's pregnant. And she would like to have more kids in the future. And her baby has a very rare, but very, it's a fatal disorder. And it's, I don't even know if I'm saying it correctly. Trisomy. I can't even say that. Fatal issue that so the child is going to be stillborn, and the child is in the process of dying right now. She's leaking amniotic fluid, according to the reports that I've read, and there are no cases of children actually living through trisomy. It's trisomy 18. It's a fatal genetic disorder. It's very sad. So looking at this story, and I was reading about this genetic disorder by itself. And I mean, I can only imagine how devastating it is. She has two kids. Her unborn child is in the process of dying now. She's leaking amniotic fluid. She's in and out of the emergency room. She's got severe cramping. Her doctors are saying that I want to be really clear. These are doctors. These aren't Planned Parenthood abortionists. Her doctors were saying that she's at risk now for very severe complications, including it could be fatal for her as well. They were talking about uterine rupture, and depending on how it gets, and I'm just laying out what they've said. These are doctors. Again, this is why I've always objected with people acting like abortionists at Planned Parenthood women, they want to be able to get, if they have a problem, they're going to go to their, they always act like they go to these abortionists at Planned Parenthood. They have actual OBGYNs. She's seen OBGYNs. So there's, I feel like that's important to note. And they're saying she may have to have a hysterectomy because of this, how the complications that have manifest. I'm just telling you what the state of things are. Because the issue of life is important, and it does not mean, and I will angrily table flipping reject the arguments from people who say that even acknowledging the current situation right here is somehow a betrayal of principle of pro-life, because it's not. This is the situation that she's in right now. That sounds pretty bad. Uterine rupture. I mean, have to get a hysterectomy. These are not light things, and she wants to have more children. So they're, you know, she's in and out of the emergency room because her pain is severe. She's leaking fluid. And she was trying to seek an abortion because she wanted to be able to try to save, have more kids in the future and not have this, you know, the have it progress. And she was denied. So it was going back and forth in the courts. And they said that if her doctors perform it, they will face civil and criminal penalties. Now, I am not pro-choice. Here's what I have a question about. So in ectopic pregnancies, the life of the mother in all of these situations where you have ectopic pregnancies or things like that, if the life of the mother is at stake, there is not a state in the union that does not have an exception for that. And I bring up ectopic pregnancies because ectopic pregnancies are so often cited by pro-choice people, pro-abortion, that there's no science, there's no technology, there's nothing that makes that a viable pregnancy. ectopic pregnancy. Nothing. With all the technology we have, all the medical knowledge that we have, it is universally known that there is nothing that can be done to make an ectopic pregnancy a viable one. And that is why it has always been included in, because it could kill the mother. I mean, I had a friend that had an ectopic pregnancy and it damn near killed her. And she had to go to the hospital and they had to do emergency surgery. Like legit when she went in because she was feeling a lot of pain and she wasn't doing well. Like they took her to the hospital from the doctor's office. They called an ambulance. It is very serious. And it's not viable. From everything that I've read, and I'm not an expert in this, I'm just telling you what I've read. From everything that I've read about the trisomy 18, most of the pregnancies don't even go that far. Babies have three copies of chromosome 18 instead of two, and it occurs at the time of conception. And they said it's fatal. It's like it's a fatal genetic syndrome, and it's heartbreaking. And they said that it's very rare. And I think the disorder that her baby has, it's considered very severe. Because some kids can survive. They can be born. They live. Most of them, though, the majority don't survive the first 2 weeks of life. Fewer than 10% live beyond the first year. Now, I bring all this up because hers is apparently already in the process of, it's apparently very severe. So this makes it a very weird thing because it's not, from everything that I've read, it doesn't seem viable. If that's not viable and an ectopic pregnancy isn't viable, now her infant's condition is, from everything that's been reported, does not seem viable. What is the difference in this, with the exceptions of this? This is the weird thing. This is where I don't like medicine politicized in any form. And this is even before COVID. I don't like medicine politicized. And this is where it gets weird when I think laws and medical fact can differ greatly. So what's the right choice here? I mean, you could easily say, okay, well, she needs to just go to term and have at it. That, I understand that saying, but from the publicly available information about her current condition, she may not make it. I mean, when you're leaking amniotic fluid and you're cramping really bad, that's pretty serious. And her doctors are saying that they may have to, I mean, once she's is delivered of her child, then they may have to take her uterus and everything else. And she desperately wants to have more kids and she's trying to save that. So what's the right answer here? This is not an issue with which you try to prove some sort of partisan fealty. It is an issue in which you want to preserve life. That's where any kind of fealty lies. But you also, and she was originally granted this, by the way, as Kane notes, she was originally granted the order to get the procedure, and then the courts were fighting over and it was denied. Here's what I want to caution people. One of the reasons, I don't see hardly any conservatives writing about this case because they have no idea how to, and they're afraid to. They're afraid to write about it because they don't want to engender any kind of ill will or make the pro-life movement look cruel. And I'm open to persuasion, and I say this as someone who is anti-abortion. Is her condition, and every condition's different, but is this specific mother's different from because the baby apparently is, again, from publicly available information, is dying. It's a very severe, this is not going to be one of the infants that lives and may not even live while it's being born. She's leaking amniotic fluid. She's now apparently they're fighting with infection. She's cramping. She's in and out of emergency rooms. Now her fertility and her life, her life at some point is going to be on the line. Her fertility's on the line now. What is the correct move here? How is it that particular situation, it is not viable from everything I've read? How is that different from an unviable ectopic pregnancy at this point? Just on that issue alone. That's where it gets tricky. I mean, I hate that anybody is, I mean, when she's leaking, and I'm using Ectopic as an example, just on based on viability alone, please just don't, you're talking about viability alone, but she's leaking amniotic fluid. That is so dangerous, you guys. That is so dangerous. That's like, you know, whenever something like that happens, it's like one of a pregnant woman's, one of her worst fears. Because then you're like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? What's wrong? And you're open to infection. And that, ugh. So what's the right decision here? This is not something that is, I think, as cut and dry as every, as previous arguments have been. And I do think that some of my most staunch pro-life friends, I've already backed out, I've cautioned them. I'm like, please take care to not project yourself as being cruel in this case, because that is how people will look at it. I don't think it's an open shut case. And I kind of tend to think that her legitimate doctors, who are not abortionists that moonlight at Planned Parenthood, these are actual, you know, certified, they work in hospitals, OBGYN, delivering babies, doing all this. I tend to think that they know a little bit better in this issue than a one-size-fits-all law as it pertains specifically to a pregnancy that, by all public accounts, is not viable, and a mother that is dying, or a baby that's dying, and a mother whose life could be in jeopardy, as her fertility already is. So that's the question. What is the decision here? What is the move? Her doctors are already worried that the back and forth court case, because she's in and out of the emergency room, every day that goes by is a day where your chances of sepsis increases. Oh my gosh, this is bad. And it's urgent.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I got a couple of questions. First off, what is a gator nugget? What is that, like a gator tendy?
I think so. I think it's like little cuts, bites the tail. Like they just cut it in cubes and now it's a nugget.
Huh.
I hope it's not what I think it is.
Oh,
I originally thought it was.
Oh, I didn't go there, but you did. Oh,
where the hell is the nugget?
So this is why I ask. Here's the headline. Quote. This is a big one. All right, ready? Drunk Florida man sexually molests manatee statue, throws gator nuggets in the restaurant. Anthony Michael Less, that was charged with a misdemeanor count of disorderly intoxication disturbance, booked in jail. The 23-year-old was witnessed by customers and staff at Rick's Reef in St. Petersburg. He was throwing gator nuggets around the restaurant. And then after he became belligerent, he began performing sexual acts on the life-size manatee statue. And it wears a little T-shirt. The manatee statue does. And the criminal complaint does not provide further details of the alleged molestation. So they arrested him. He was yelling obscenities in the parking lot when officers arrived at the scene. He was heavily intoxicated. Had no clue as to why he was, you know, being arrested. No idea. He was booked, misdemeanor count, released from jail the next morning, probably with a major headache. So there you have it. And I also now know what gator nuggets are. That manatee statue, why though? Stick with us, third hour on the way.
We need a clear articulation of the strategy to allow Ukraine to win. And thus far, their responses have been insufficient. They have not provided us the clarity and the detail that we have requested over and over since literally 24 hours after I was handed the gavel as Speaker of the House. And so what the Biden administration seems to be asking for is billions of additional dollars with no appropriate oversight, no clear strategy to win, and none of the answers that I think the American people are owed.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good enough point right there. That's Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, saying, yeah, we're still not moving on any of this. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour. And the Missouri Attorney General is going to join us at the bottom of this third hour to talk about the suit, the Media Matter suit and more. So that's, you know, it could be, and I've seen this floated, but I just don't know if the administration is smart enough to do this. I've seen some float the idea that maybe perhaps Biden is unwilling to negotiate with Republicans on inclusion for border and sacrificing their empty check for their blank check for Ukraine as a way to force Zelensky to start to wind down his fight against Russia and to conclude this. Because at some point they were actually doing that, and then the West got involved. And do you honestly? I don't think the administration is that smart, though. Do you think? I don't think Biden's that smart. Sorry, but the guy can barely speak. I don't think he's that smart. I don't think anyone that is in his inner circle is that smart. Do you? I don't have faith in these people to make those kind of moves. So if it seems that way, I think it's accidental. I think it's by accident. If it seems that way, I think it's like by accident. But I don't, although that could be a good tactic. And I think Republicans need to hold that line. I mean, Zelensky needs to understand the United States before they can consider welfare for anybody else. And they shouldn't really, but before they do, they have to consider their constitutional obligations here to taxpayers, to voters here, like our southern border to here. This is all what takes priority, takes precedent. It's more important. And that has to be dealt with. I just don't know if I think that it is, if they are smart enough to make those kind of moves. I just don't know. A couple of other things I want to make sure that we touch on. I saw this earlier today. So apparently, Kid Rock is cool with Bud Light again. I don't dislike Kid Rock. I dislike Bud Light. He is, according to the Washington Examiner, back on the Bud Light train, wishing the brand nothing but the best following over 8 months of criticism. He says, quote, I think they've got some work still to get, you know, some of the base that they lost. He said, I've said a few times, I'd love to see them get triple fratty, hit it head on, self-deprecation kind of, you know. So in the very beginning, he shot up a whole bunch of Anheuser-Busch stuff, and everybody was boycotting it and all of this stuff. Now, Rock, he had said that he doesn't think that the punishment that they've received fits the crime anymore. He says, I want to see people get back on board and become bigger because it's the America I want to live in. And he said, what would that say about us as like-minded people who are like, hey, cut it out. What's the matter with you? There's nothing wrong with, you know, giving a spanking. Someone gets taught a lesson. They say we've made a mistake. Let's move on, etc. We've done it for worse. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so here's my problem with this. Did Bud Light ever, at the very least, I don't give a rat's ass who's been fired or not, did they at the very least ever say sorry to women for their cosplay promotion? What have I always said? This is real easy, y'all. What have I always said from the get-go? All they got to do is be like, ladies, we are sorry. We value you. You could even do a frat type of ad about it. I didn't care. Could be like, we value you. We love it when you do keg stands. We love it when, you know, at our frat parties. We love it. I mean, I don't even care. But I want acknowledgement. I don't want to just a bland, well, we made a mistake. And this is not about, you know, scoring a point or anything. I want to know that they truly understand. And I want other brands to see that this brand truly understands why it was so offensive. I don't even like using that word. I don't like it when a brand makes me sound like a damn feminist. It's infuriating because we're not. But you participated in cosplay marketing. You got spanked. And we're supposed to interpret time as a substitute for acknowledgement of offense and apology? Because I don't. Like I said, this is real easy. I don't even think that, and someone made the point, I don't even think they've acted contrite at all. They haven't even acted contrite. I don't owe you my forgiveness. I don't owe you any kind of moving on. You know what? In order to move on, the person who made the transgression, the transgressor, they have to acknowledge what they did. You can't have reconciliation without someone going, oh, yeah, I totally messed up in this way. And I'm sorry that I did this. Time isn't a substitute for that. Don't sit here and act like a big champion of the culture war if you're only in it until you know, for a certain, there's no shelf life on this. That's what makes me mad. I mean, it'd be really easy for the brand to do this. Reconciliation requires acknowledgement. Otherwise, go do something unflattering to yourself. Because, no, duck my halls. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to drink what I would wash my beer glasses in. We're not going to sit here and move on. There's no moving on. And the moving on starts with acknowledging and saying, you know what? Ladies, we offended you with our lack of chivalry. We offended you by reducing who you are to cosplay and a cheap marketing stunt. And we're sorry that we did that. That's not difficult to do. Why is that so difficult? Why is that so hard? What, because somebody might get paid, it's all okay now? Or because somebody gets paid, it's okay? Or someone gets a donation from this, it's okay? I mean, don't sit here and act like you're a big fighter in the culture war if this is how it's going down. So I'm curious, like how, at what point, you know, and I asked this on Twitter, and everyone's like, nope, they did not. They did not. They did not say sorry. They didn't do this. Someone goes, were you ever a Bud Light drinker? B, I grew up with Bud Light. I lived two blocks from the brewery. I saw the Clydesdales every damn day. I grew up with Anheuser-Busch. Okay, my family worked with Anheuser-Busch. Anheuser-Busch products were in our cooler on the porch in the Ozarks every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, every Easter. Hallelujah. That's how it went. So if you're going to have a phallus measuring contest, I will choke you to death on it. Don't. End scene. Are you serious? I'm going to have fun with that fellow on Twitter, so you can look for that later. Sorry, dude, but, you know, you're going to be my damn it doll on this one. You know how that is, Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whoo, boy. So seriously, what's the answer here?
I got an answer.
Yeah, what's
Here's
your answer?
Here's the answer. Who cares whatever Kid Rock does?
Well, no, I'm just like, at what point, because not just him, it's some other people, too.
Yeah,
I think people
will take it upon themselves to decide whether or not they are going to accept the current terms of so-and-so coming back.
What are even the terms?
Well, he said their punishment already exceeded the crime.
Like what punishment? Oh, they lost the money?
Yeah, the billions lost, the market cap lost, the months and months of boycotting, and he's... That's his decision, whatever.
So he's given up. He's waving the white flag of surrender.
I'm not sure.
That's how I'm looking at it. He's been in the knee. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Look, I like the guy.
That's his thing, whatever. I couldn't care less what he does and never have.
Kane, we all know that you wake up every day and go, gosh, I wonder what Kid Rock did today.
Might be jealous of that mullet.
Does he have a mullet?
I think he's got long. He's got a party in the
back.
He's
got a couple of motorcycles.
Doesn't he have
a
party in the back, I guess?
Well, yeah, but isn't it also a party all over?
I don't know. He's always wearing a hat, I think.
See, mullet... Wait, hold up. Sidebar. Let's clarify this. A mullet is strictly business up front.
Right.
In the back then, is the party.
Right.
That's like it's AKA Kentucky Missouri Waterfall. Compromise, yeah. AKA Camaro Crash Helmet, AKA Kentucky Waterfall. That's what that is. Business up front. So when you're looking at them straight on, you're like, well, hello, professional sir.
Right.
And then they turn to the side and you're like, yeah, bro. That's the difference. Does that make sense?
Does to me.
Yeah, I feel like we just gave a lesson there.
That's a lesson.
You are graduated now.
I'm not sure if I've ever seen outside of... Wasn't he in that one David Spade movie? I think he had a hat off in that movie, but I don't think I've seen him with his hat off in quite a while.
Yeah, I haven't either. Now that I come to think of it. He may have bangs. I don't even know.
But yeah, it doesn't matter to me.
Men should not have bangs.
I haven't drank Bud Light or Budweiser in a while. But it's not because I'm boycotting it or whatever. So people can do whatever the hell they want. Kid Rock can do whatever the heck he wants. I think they're saying that when he shot up a bunch of cases of Bud Light, that people followed and there was a big boycott and that he was responsible for that. And now that he's back on board, that a bunch of people will just come right back on board with Bud Light. And I don't think that's how it's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling this fellow, not only did I feed a Clydesdale once, but I shot all my bottle rockets out of empty Bud bottles. Degeneration X motion.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go.
Did you hold the bottle while it happened?
Well, not if I wanted to do a bunch of them at a time. So, okay, hold up. There's like rules for bottle rocket war, right? Like you can light them and throw them at people.
True.
I mean, my mother hovered over me as a child. But we would like to get, my uncle would always, like, we could count on him to help us with our artillery. And we would line all the bottles up because I had so many cousins. We'd break up into two groups, and it was war. People would get hurt, and you'd just be like, "Shh, you're not dead. Shut up," because nobody wanted to get in trouble. So we would, and this is like in the 80s and 90s. So we would line up all the. My uncle would come over, and at first he'd walk over very confidently, and then his walk got lazier and stumblier as the evening went on, and he'd give us another, and he was a cantankerous dude. He'd give us an empty bottle and we'd line them all up, and it was because you know how sometimes you can't have a punk. Like when we got the lighters that you could, they were long and you could press the little trigger thing on and light it, that changed the game. That was a game changer. That was like having, you know, that's the difference between having smooth bore and not. And so we would have all these things lined up in these bottles because it's really hard to light all of them with these punks. And you'd have to get all of us, like everybody on our side, we'd all have to be right there. Anyway, long story short, we'd light them up out of those bottles. And it was just like an old-timey war. Instead of arrows, it was bottle rockets. It was a beautiful thing. It's how we celebrated America, by trying to kill each other. It's awesome.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So people with children live longer, says a new study, but only if you have this many kids. Yeah. So the whole dink thing, the dinky dinks, double income, no kids. They are dinks. Who prefer changing time zones by traveling the world as opposed to changing diapers. A study from University of Michigan suggests that parenting actually can extend your life expectancy to longer. And they said, however, you know, there is kind of a limit. You know, you can't have like having more undercuts the benefits, according to their survey. So they said that if you have two kids, that seems to be a pretty good job. That's a pretty good deal. 2 to 3. I think you're all full of it. I don't care. Just do what makes you happy, right? As long as you take care of it and you don't go on. Don't permanently live on welfare. All right. The nation's largest pharmacy chain, CVS, Kroger, and Rite Aid. Apparently, Washington Post has reported that they could hand prescription records to police and government investigators without a warrant, according to a congressional investigation. Information is the new oil. It is. Think about it. Oh, good grief. Oh, this was in Missouri. It's at Panda, which is just what we call Panda Express. A dude is accused of stabbing a Panda Express worker over food quality. Dude, you're at a Panda. Why are you getting all mad? It was in Richmond Heights, Kane. Panda in Richmond Heights. Yeah, Kane and Barbara from St. Louis, in case you're just tuning in. A dude's accused of stabbing this Panda Express employee. He punched another one in the face in Missouri, Richmond Heights. It's about, northwest of St. Louis, downtown St. Louis, over the quality of his food. The St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney's Office charged 33-year-old Philip Person, Mr. Person, with felony assault and weapons charges. And it was about 4 p.m. Wednesday of last week. The guy who works at the restaurant was legit stabbed in the back. He apparently got into an argument with employees over his food, and then he punched. Oh, the other person he punched in the head was a female. And they got him outside. He stabbed the male employee. He was arrested, and they took the knife into evidence. You're at a Panda Express, you know? What are you upset about? Yeah, so this woman was arrested after running down a Montana airport runway. Helena police reported that they arrested a 42-year-old Tennessee woman who was acting erratic. They said in an email that they were called to the airport 6:30 in the morning Saturday. They had a deal with a woman who was trying to board a plane. She ran down the runway, climbed a fence before police arrival. They did locate her. No further information was available. Kane adds that she must have eaten all of her gummies before she got to TSA. Are those pot gummies?
Seems logical to me.
I mean, does that make you do that?
I don't know.
Does it make you act nuts? I have many questions. Hey, joining us coming up here, Missouri AG Andrew Bailey. He's going to take it to Media Matters. Stick with us.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. You can listen across the country, and you can also catch the simulcast 347 channel. That's the channel for DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook as well. And don't forget to catch the archived show and the podcast. Giddy is not a generous enough word to describe the warm, fuzzy feeling of joy that just swelled up into my chest and almost burst out of the top of my head when I read that the attorney general of my home state, where my entire family still lives, and they all voted for him, where the attorney general of the state of the great state of Missouri is going after Media Matters. Now, for those really quickly who are unfamiliar with Media Matters, it's the activist arm of the Democrat Party. I have danced with this entity for almost two decades now. And when I lived in Missouri, they tried to get me fired as the token conservative from CNN. They tried to get me kicked off The View. They tried to get me kicked off air. They stalked me at every single event that I went to. They still listen to my radio show and they still try stuff here in Texas. But they have been ridiculous, not just against me, but every conservative. And after Elon Musk bought Twitter and renamed it X, they've been going after Elon Musk. And in fact, that's how all of this kind of really kind of kickstarted. They accused him of basically being anti-Semitic and running advertiser content next to Nazi propaganda. And then everything broke loose. And now the Missouri Attorney General just said, okay, well, he's going to bring the FO part of FA. And he joins us now via Skype. Sir, it's good to see you. I'm very excited about this case. Talk to me about this, because this is not, they're not the ombudsman as they portray themselves to be. It is just like a hate campaign they wage against people they don't like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And thanks for having me on and covering this important story. Look, I believe in the right to free speech as a foundational principle of our republic. And we're in a war against radical progressive tyrants who will lie, cheat, and steal to take that freedom away from Americans. The allegation here is that Media Matters used fraud in an enterprise to solicit money from Missourians and then used it in a market manipulation to attack the last platform dedicated to free speech in America. And we can't let that happen. We've launched an investigation and we're going to root out any lies, any deception, any fraud, uncover exactly what went happen here, hold wrongdoers accountable, and ultimately protect Missourians and our right to free speech.
And that's the big thing, too, because they were getting money. They were soliciting donations from people and acting as though it was going towards this campaign to clean up X or something to that effect. Like it was like Elon Musk was purposefully running these advertisers, their ads next to pro-Nazi content, which that's such a ridiculous claim to make. But they've never, ever gone up against, you know, someone like yourself. They've never faced this type of heat before, ever.
Well, it's important that we continue to push this investigation forward. I know the attorney general down in Texas is conducting a similar investigation. We're hopeful other states will join in, because it's important that we present a united front here. Media Matters is built on lies. Again, this is a radical progressive advocacy group masquerading as a news organization, but they're no such thing. But I would point out, too, here, the allegation is that they've lied in two different ways. Number one, they lied when they solicited donations from Missourians in order to defraud advertisers on Twitter. But then they also lied when they manipulated the algorithms to juxtapose controversial speech and actually emphasize controversial speech next to images of the advertisers. This is enormously problematic. This is market manipulation. That's a whole different line of legal authority that might be a fount of authority to go after them. But I would point out that, you know, if you look at the lawsuit that Elon Musk has filed, one of the facts that he asserts in the lawsuit is that there are more than 500 million X users. And that when they tried to replicate what Media Matters did, in one instance, they could only generate the juxtaposition of controversial speech next to the advertiser in one out of 500 million instances, and in another instance, in two out of 500 million instances. Now, think about that for a minute. The odds of winning the Powerball are one in 292 million. So you have a better chance of winning the Powerball than replicating what Media Matters did. Again, this is market manipulation at its worst. Why were they doing it? In order to destroy free speech in America. That's why we've got to continue to fight back. And investigations like this are so important.
We're talking with Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. This is an interesting kind of like two multi-pronged approach to this, because he's going after for defamation, which I know is very difficult to litigate. It's tough. And you're focusing on the fraud aspect, because I think that's that's a great argument, especially if they've made this knowing it was an empty accusation and it was just designed to maliciously tarnish someone's character, which is what his case will focus on. They were trying to solicit and raise money off of that.
Yeah. Again, if Media Matters doesn't like what's being said on Twitter, they should offer a counter speech, not rip off Missourians in an attempt to manipulate the marketplace to shut down the last platform dedicated to free speech. But as you pointed out, they hate X because they can't control it. Look at the rest of big tech and how it cowers in fear and succumbs to government censorship. We've exposed that in our First Amendment suit, Missouri v. Biden. We've been first out of the gate on this issue. We've also litigated against the gag order placed on President Trump. We are dedicated to free speech in America. And what Media Matters is doing represents a new front in this war, where radical progressive advocacy groups will manipulate the marketplace to destroy forums of open public, free, fair, and open debate if they can't control that. I mean, this should frighten all Americans.
You are doing what conservatives wished elected officials had done for like 20, 30 years. And you're like actually doing it and calling these groups to account, which brings me to my point of nobody knows where their money comes from because they don't have advertising. They're not like a website. It's not like the New York Times online. It's not like the Examiner. It's not like Daily Caller. Is that something that I know that there's a whole process to go through. Is that something that you look to perhaps coming up in this case?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we're going to see where the evidence leads us. We've demanded certain documents be retained as we, generate subpoenas to go after those documents. And it's going to take time to review them. But I'll tell you, again, there are several founts of legal authority here to bring to justice wrongdoers. I mean, like I said, number one, if Missourians were defrauded in this enterprise to solicit contributions for a nefarious purpose, I mean, that's problematic under the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. But there's also an element of this. If you're manipulating the marketplace to benefit other market competitors, there's an antitrust angle here, too. And so it's going to be important to look at these documents and determine exactly who was involved and at what level. But at the end of the day, at face value, you can look at the fact that the Media Matters had to go through four or five different steps. And one of the steps they had to use, they had to do an endless number of times to get the juxtaposition of the controversial speech next to the advertisers. That is market manipulation. Why would they do it? Who benefited? The only reason to do it is to destroy X, the last platform dedicated to free speech in America. And that's why it's so important to fight back.
That's huge. Have you spoken to Elon Musk at all? Have you all talked about these cases?
I have not yet. No. At the end of the day, you know, we in the state of Missouri, we've got an obligation under state statute to protect Missourians. But again, we were first out of the gate on this issue. And this is just a new front in the fight for the freedom of speech. And I think the question before Americans is, are we going to be allowed to enjoy the legacy of freedom handed down from the founding fathers and protected by previous generations and codified in our Constitution? Or are we going to let radical progressive tyrants control what we think, what we say, what we hear?
Amen to that. We're talking with Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. You also filed suit over the St. Louis Pediatric Transgender Center. That's a mouthful. Their refusal to turn over records. This is an ongoing case because you've been trying to get documents to them for some time. And the Biden administration has even tried to obstruct in this case. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, Dana, you're exactly right. Look, I want Missouri to be the safest state in the nation for children. And so, you know, to that end, after a whistleblower came forward last February and made some very credible and specific allegations against the clinic in St. Louis, we launched an investigation, the first of its kind in the nation. We pushed that investigation forward. We have received and reviewed numerous documents, but there are other batches of documents we've requested. I mean, the investigation is not a fixed in time thing. You start pulling on a thread and it leads you to other aspects of the investigation. And that's what this is. And so we requested additional documents. In the meantime, the General Assembly enacted a statute. We defended that statute from legal attack in court. We're the first state in the nation to successfully defeat that kind of legal attack at the trial court level and defend a statute that ends child sterilization in Missouri. But we can't let the investigation go. We've still got to look back, hold wrongdoers accountable, and demonstrate to the public what went wrong here so we can ensure we have the proper systems in place to prevent it from ever happening again. The clinic has said, well, HIPAA, we can't turn the stuff over. But they should know that HIPAA has an explicit textual provision that carves out when you have state regulatory bodies that are conducting this kind of investigation. So we anticipate that they had previously agreed to turn over the documents and then changed their mind after the federal government got involved and told them not to. And so we can't let Joe Biden shut down this investigation. Again, it's important to the people of the state of Missouri and to continue to protect kids here in the state of Missouri.
We're going to be watching both of these cases, especially the Media Matters one. I can't wait to see how that ends up. Andrew Bailey, the Attorney General for the great state of Missouri. Missourians are very lucky to have such a vigilant watchdog like yourself going and watching their backs on behalf of them and against all of these bad actors out there. So all my family lives there. They're very lucky to have you. It's good to have you on the program today. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, ma'am. Merry Christmas to you as well.
Of course. We got more coming up, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of our broadcast. I don't think I've ever been so excited, by the way, about a court case in my life. That Media Matters case. Oh, please let it be on C-SPAN, because I will literally just keep the cable just for C-SPAN. Just to watch that. Woo. All right. We got to get moving, because we got today's stupidity on the way, too, coming up.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Hey, first of all, I think my own personal ethics in life are, I think, enough to keep me going on the right path. And I think that there are enough negative aspects about the organizational church.
Mm-hmm.
That you're very well aware of. I'm not against it. I identify myself as a Catholic. I was raised, I was baptized, I was confirmed, I was married in the church. My children were baptized in the church. But as far as practicing it, it seems almost like a pro forma thing that I don't really need to do.
What is with this weird music in the background? That's weird. He acts like it's an ethnicity. It's not. Like, what is that? Welcome back to the program. That's Anthony Fauci. So apparently he's been vacationing at the, I read that it was the Baja Mar in the Bahamas, which is a super swank hotel where rooms can go for like thousands of dollars a night. Super swank. And, you know, I mean, he's got that coronavirus money. He's won awards. He was given awards by even the former president of the United States. He handed him an award right at the end of all of it. Some people were sitting in J6 cells. A lot of money for this. Thousands of dollars. He's got that COVID money. He's got that CCP COVID money. Doesn't he still have security detail that we pay for? Does he still have that?
That's a good question. Maybe.
I mean, I thought, because I remember having it as a headline. I got it pulled up. So it was last year. But he had taxpayer funded security still. So I'm wondering, is he, they showed him pictured at the airport not wearing masks and all this stuff. That was at the Bahamian airport that he's at. But hasn't he been wanting us to wear masks? Again, hasn't he been talking about that still also? But he's not wearing one. Just kind of curious about all this, you know, just interesting. I'm just, you know, so he hasn't answered questions, congressional questions, about gain of function. There's a lot of questions that remain about his association to the CCP lab in Wuhan. But no, he is in the Bahamas. I don't think somebody said he's not, that's not Atlantis. I think he was staying at, that was, somebody said it was the Baja Mar. That's expensive. Like, what's the cheapest room at the Baja Mar? That's like it's a 4-star hotel, but it's like one of the new ones, isn't it? It's like super swank. Must be nice. Big pimpin', spending them G's, Fauci. Dang. I'm just saying, you know, he's got that COVID money. Does he have taxpayer security still? I'm curious about that, because I'm wondering how much that costs.
The last I saw back in September this year, he was still pleading that he needed it.
Oh, for what? For what? What does he need it for? All these people that are in these ivory towers, I tell you what, all these people, I'm just saying, whether it's this, whether it's these university presidents, whatever it is, it's kind of crazy that they just don't. That's why, one of the reasons, by the way, why I like what Andrew Bailey's doing, going after these, like Media Matters. I can't stand Media Matters. I hope Elon Musk drags them. I hope he takes ownership and shuts them all down. And I hope they all lose their jobs, because that would be hysterical. And I wouldn't feel the least bit sad about it. They are some of like the meanest, cruelest, ugliest, like spiritually ugliest people I've ever encounter. I used to call them the Soros Lotion Brigade.
And I love the people that don't care about the First Amendment, but act like this is like a First Amendment thing. And the same with that professor or the school president. It's about harassment. This is not about free speech.
Yeah, it's not. Well, and it's not protected speech when you're lying about someone. Right. When you're trying to incite against them based on an absolute misrepresentation designed to damage their character, damage public perception of them, and damage them professionally. And that's their whole goal. That's they've been doing this for so long. I remember when it was announced the first time that I was going to guest host The View, they literally launched this whole thing online where they gave out all the handles of all the producers and the emails of the executives, and they were telling people to like wage this online war against me. They had promoted a Facebook page that popped up that was trying to get me fired from CNN when I was the token conservative there. They did all of this stuff. They promoted all of that. So yeah, I'm bend them over a barrel. Let's see it. Come on. All right. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
Well, we know Media Matters lies. And the Biden administration lies along with their economic advisors. This is Lael Brainard. Brainard. Emphasis on the ard. All right. This is what she says about the economy. Listen.
I feel like the underlying trend lines in inflation are good. We've seen grocery prices come down.
What?
We've seen prices at the pump come down.
What?
We've seen some of the
so this
core,
is a classic ruin things so that they're 300% more expensive, cut them by 40%, and then take credit as though things are coming down and
like
things
what,
are down.
What does she think? No, that's not
people aren't
works.
Buying this.
Yeah, no, they're not buying that at all. Folks, that does it for the show today. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack. Lorraine's got a great piece that's going to be coming up about that Texas abortion story. And, of course, I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.